Good evening, everyone. Great to be here. So, tonight's kind of a fun night. Recently, I took a trip to Guatemala, and I went on a special kind of retreat called a darkness retreat. And tonight I'm going to share with you a bit about my retreat. It was a 7-day retreat in darkness. And I thought that, sometimes Buddhist Dharma talks, they can be lists of factors of enlightenment or something like that, different teachings. And I thought tonight would be really fun and interesting and kind of a challenge for me would just to be, just to tell the story and in a more intimate way, as though we're all friends and we all know each other, and kind of bring it into the room as though we can all join in the journey together. The journey for me was so archetypal in a way that I thought that actually we could all in some way relate with it. So I will share a bit and then open up the field for any questions or comments or dialogue, and we can just see where it takes us. So I thought maybe I'd just share a little bit about this theme of darkness retreats. I grew up in the Vipassana tradition with my father at Spirit Rock, and I found my way over time gravitating toward the Tibetan tradition of Buddhism, also known as the Vajrayana tradition. And the Vajrayana tradition is very much a yogic style of Buddhism, which really places a lot of emphasis on the body and the sacredness of the body and the path of awakening as being an embodied experience. And with that in mind, the Tibetan monks and the Tibetan lamas, there's the monastics, and then there's a whole tradition of yogis, the yogis that would go into caves, the yogis that would go into the hills, and really go deep into the heart of stillness and silence, and in this case, darkness. So I had heard lore of darkness retreats for some time from my teacher, Reggie Ray, who is the founder of the Dharma Ocean Sangha in Colorado. And he talked a lot to our Sangha about, well, someday you'll get to go on darkness retreats, and when you go into darkness retreats, you'll have an experience. The traditional darkness retreat in the Tibetan tradition is 49 days. Yeah, a 49-day retreat. And the idea with the 49-day retreat, Tibetans, it's a specific number. If you read the Tibetan Book of the Dead, 49 days is traditionally the amount of time that the soul or the formless mind stream has between the time of death, the time that the consciousness leaves the body, and then there's a kind of formless intermediate state called the bardo. And supposedly that's a 49-day cycle. And then if we're still on our journey, then we will move on to some other realm of form or formlessness, or come back as another human being or another life form. But the Tibetans believe that actually this time when the consciousness is not in a body is a very, very rich and precious time. And so the darkness retreat is a way of entering a kind of formless state where normally where our consciousness is so oriented outward onto objects of sensory experience. So the lights, a person. And so we're kind of always projecting our mind onto something. And in the darkness retreat, what happens is we're in a container where we just don't have that luxury. We don't have that thing for our mind really to project onto. There's not much there. We are in the darkness, we're in the space, and we're with ourselves. And that's where the journey begins and ends, is the journey of being in the space and merging with the space and connecting deeper and deeper into the nature. Well, what is the nature of the space itself? So one thing I love this. It's very inspiring for me. A Tibetan Lama named Tolko Urgen, he said that if you could actually be completely present in awareness at the for about 20 minutes at the time of your death, and just rest in the pure clarity and the clear awareness of your experience, that at that time there wouldn't be anything to the mind, if the mind didn't project onto anything else and was just able to relax and open and dissolve into that the basic space, that there wouldn't be any movement anywhere else, and that it's kind of like, and the image would be like a child just sort of jumping into the lap of the mother. There's just a sense of total relaxation into that. So the kind of the view of the training is that the darkness retreat is a way of training for this time of leaving the body, and it's a way of being in a kind of abstract space, an open space, so that if and when, and actually it will be when that happens to us, we're ready to go. We're enjoying the process, and we can really relax in that moment. So that's a kind of, you know, it's a tall order in some way, and I just thought, well, it's gonna be interesting. So I think I want to share about my experience, just sort of three levels of experience. There's the sort of outer level of like what happened, what was the container and the logistics. And then more of the inner level is the emotional journey and the adventure of this mind in the space. And then I wanted to talk a little bit about the kind of the innermost level, the very last couple days, some of the interesting kind of phenomenon that happened in that time, kind of the innermost awareness levels that were really impactful for me. So just on the outer level, the retreat center, it was a Hindu retreat center, called the Mahadevi Ashram. And it's in this really incredible power spot, Lake Atitlan, which is a sacred lake in Guatemala, and it's surrounded by volcanoes. And it's a Mayan power spot where there's just, you, when you're there, there's a sense of incredible energy and power and synchronicity. And this is a Hindu ashram, two devotees of Amachi created a kind of like a solar eco-village, and just a really lovely place with a garden, just like kind of a Garden of Eden, and inexpensive and rustic, and yet like very beautiful, very so much dignity and sacredness put into the whole structure of the place. And they built an earth dome. They built this dome. I would say it's not very big. It's probably 15 feet in diameter, and sacks of earth just stacked around each other in concentric circles with a covering of plaster over it, just very rugged kind of space. And it's really interesting that they figured out how to do the windpipes so that it just stays, there's always air circulated through the dome, and it stays like a very consistent temperature. So it's like maybe 65 degrees, and you hear just the hum of the wind all the time in the background. And other than that, it's got everything you need. You have a bed. If you want to sleep in the loft, you can. And I chose to sleep on the ground, but it's got a bed and a place to store your clothes and shower, sink, a shrine. And there's a little slot where three meals a day, someone will come and slip the food through at 8 a.m., 1 p.m., and 8 p.m. And so you hear the sound, the rustling of someone slipping your tea and your rice and dal through the slot and ring the bell, and that's it. That's the entertainment for the day. That's it. And you can also, so there's a space holder, and my space holder was just an incredible young woman who had really created a space of kindness and awareness, and there was really a sense of being held very well by the space holder. This can take a moment to actually feel that. Yeah, there was just a sense of so much in prayer and intention that had gone into holding this space. And so far, over the last 2 years, about 50 people have gone into the space. And so you really do feel a presence in this space. And that's kind of the setup, is just that you have everything you need, and really the only practice is to relax and enjoy whatever comes up, to trust your experience. So that was the question I had. I posted it to the Facebook world before I went in. I had this quote. I said, well, how much do you trust your own mind? How much are you ready to let go and drop in and see what happens? And I thought that in going into the retreat, there was a sense that the moment that I clicked the PayPal and offered the money, it was like suddenly like you're on the roller coaster. You're clinking up, ratcheting up, and you know you're about to go over the edge and off to somewhere. So there was my good friend is in the front row. There was a buildup over months. Just this building sense of like, well, what is going to happen in this space? So you arrive. I arrived in the evening time and kind of said goodbye to the rest of the world. And I had my flashlight. There's one time you get to see the dome and really arrange everything. You get to put everything where you want to. And then you light a little candle and you say your intention, you make your prayer, and when you blow out that candle, that's it. You are doing Stevie Wonder for a week. You're in Stevie's world after that. So. So, and, you know, and just logistically, it's not really that hot. You know, on the one hand, it's you're doing everything. You can't, after that, you can't see your own hand. So you're doing everything. It's not hard, but it's not easy. You have to, you just kind of know where your stuff is. And, but it's also kind of humbling to move around and you don't know where your stuff is sometimes, or if you get lost, in somewhere, then you have to come back and really feel what's there. So I would say that's kind of the outer level of it. I want to just pause and see if anyone has a question or anything before I go on.
Are you the only one on this retreat? It's just one dome with just you in it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can go for, the minimum time is 2 days, I think, 2 or 4 days, and then it goes up to, someone's going in for 3 months soon. So, yeah. Yeah, there's a toilet. So there's a toilet, and there's a solar shower, and there's a sink. Yeah, it's there's nothing. Yep. That's the idea.
So how did you organize your time in the darkness?
Well, that brings us to the next stage in the journey. So that's kind of the outer level. Tibetans like this theme of outer, inner, secret. So inner level is really like the psychological journey, how to relate with this space. I want to read this quote by Carl Jung. There is no coming to consciousness without pain. People will do anything, no matter how absurd, in order to avoid facing their own soul. One does not become enlightened by imagining figures of light, but by making the darkness conscious. So I had done a little bit of research on darkness retreat going in, and the sense that I got, I listened, there's a great podcast by my teacher Reggie, you can Google Reggie Ray Darkness Retreats, but there was this one line that Reggie said in the podcast that really got through to me. He said, with darkness retreats, the thing about darkness retreats is that there's no breaks. And the way I actually took that in two different ways. On the one hand, there's no breaks, like there's no breaks between sessions. And then on another level, there's just no breaks on the car. So wherever you're at on the journey, there's just a sense of the journey, it just keeps on going. And I'm saying this just so you can just kind of start to wrap your mind around like what this is like. If you want to, you could even try listening with your eyes closed. That might be fun. But I thought I would bring, just kind of mention a little bit about these different phases. When I look back over the time, it all kind of blends together, and yet there's these thematic waves and chapters that came through. So I wanted to just kind of bring you through some of my experience of this time. So the first phase of the journey, I called sleep forever. And, you know, there's just this sense of like suddenly being in this dark womb, this cosmic womb that I had no idea what it was. Yeah. And yet it feels safe. And finally I can catch up on the sleep that I've been missing out on for the last 15 years. And actually, what was really amazing was I looked online afterwards, and there's a Taoist teacher, Montauk Chia. He's a Qigong master, and he also leads darkness retreats. And he said he called the first 3 days 3 days of internal darkness and sleep therapy. during the 3 days, he says this, during the 3 days, one has a chance to catch up on all the lost sleep that has occurred over the last few years. Complete isolation from external light causes the pineal gland to flood the brain with the neurotransmitter melatonin. So, the beginning of the retreat was kind of like waking up in bed and you're comfortable and there's finally nowhere to go. And you can just keep on hitting the snooze button. So, you know, that's what I did for a long time. It just hit the snooze button over and over and over again. But at some point, you realize that you can't quite sleep through the whole retreat. And that's what sort of brought me into phase two, which I would call inner restlessness. Because in the first phase, there's just this real hibernation. There's a sense, there's no light, there's no sun, there's so little stimulation on one level. And so that part of the self, that the my personality, it's like it's just going into hibernation in some way. But there's this other force below the personality that has a life of its own. And this force, it feels like it's really deep inside. It's somewhere really, somewhere else, somewhere wild, somewhere unknown, uncharted. And it just starts to come out to play. There's this kind of like rustling, like I felt like an animal, like a kind of wild animal starting to like feel that none of the humans were around anymore. And you know, eventually you're on a meditation retreat and somehow the last thing I wanted to do was sit and practice meditation, but I figured I might as well practice meditation. So I would spend some time sitting by my shrine and, you know, practicing the instructions I'd been given. But the interesting thing about this container is that as much as, you know, I'm used to sitting for 45 minutes or sitting for an hour, there's no one to get you up and there's no one to tell you to sit. And there's a kind of chaos in the space. There's really nothing that's telling you what to do. There's no adult on duty. And at the same time, there's a quality of like you, like I've just arrived, if you're landing in the space, and although you finally made it to a safe place, what's still there is this like background speed. Because there's so much speed that we're moving around with all day long, this cultural modern speed, and it's still going, you know, it's still in motion. So it's like these two opposing forces are suddenly coming together. There's the speed and there's the movement and the impulse to do something, and then there's nothing to do and nowhere to go. So between those two opposing forces, you're sandwiched. I'm sandwiched in the middle, and what's there is just this angst, this existential anxiety, and deep energy, core energy, coming to the surface, kind of like icebergs, like the icebergs are starting to melt, and as those icebergs of kind of frozenness or numbness are melting, as the breath is opening through the body, there's just all of this energy coming to life. And at some point, sitting's not so interesting anymore. it's not really a question of interesting. It's just like how does one in a junior in this process begin to hold all of the energy? And so invariably, actually, this was recommended to me. It's period of sitting and then period of movement and chanting, and then period of sleep, and just kind of rotating the cycles, these three cycles. And I have to say, these sessions, this kind of goes into the third phase of the journey. This restless energy is coming to the surface, and then suddenly it's starting to become embodied more and more over the next day three, day four. And the movement starts to become very, very, very archetypal. And there's this sense of the sleep, there's periods of sleep, and then a period of waking up, like this deeper inner consciousness waking up. So the sleep and the waking life start to just blend into one kind of landscape. And the really interesting thing about this landscape is no one's watching. No one's, you know, even if I've been on retreat by my solitary retreat before, and it's amazing to have the space, but there's still a sense like you're watching yourself. And in this situation, sometimes I'd have my eyes closed, sometimes I have my eyes open, but especially sometimes with the eyes closed, the body wanted to move, wanted to open, wanted to come to life in ways that had nothing to do with what I thought was going to happen. And so finally, you know, there's no one watching, and you're allowed to be as big as you are. I'm allowed to just really let it out. And these very primal self-structures are finally getting their voice. They're coming to life. And as Arpita, my space holder, said, she said, you know, it's your playground. You can just do whatever you want to do. And with that, the really interesting thing is, on one level, it felt really good to be in the authentic movement or the authentic expression. But on the other level, I could really feel this sense of my personality, or just the hint of watching something or watching myself, feeling like, ah, that's too much, can't do that. So there's still this kind of sense of the control mechanism. And there's kind of this fluctuation back and forth between the real enjoyment and then the real shame or the pain in whatever it might be. I just wonder if I want to pause and just see if anyone has a thought or a question.
You have a time structure with the food entertainment. I'm wondering how does that affect all this open flow?
Mm-hmm. Can you say it another way?
Say it another way?
Mm-hmm.
Well, setting aside the food image, I was thinking you're painting a picture of something that just kind of goes on and on and on, structureless, and you can do what you want with it.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of the saving grace. Actually, I heard the guy before me in the dome decided, maybe it was the one before, a couple people before, he decided that he didn't want the bell at the same time, and so it could be rang at random times. And another person before me decided to fast all week, And so there's lots of ways to do it. Yeah.
It's interesting, when you were describing the experience, I kept thinking, I had this feeling that something was watching you, that it made me sin. Or I had a sensation that you were being filmed or something. And then I wondered if you were, I know you said you were chanting, but did you talk at all, or did you talk to yourself, were you just silent? Was it like really, you know, spiritual sounds or
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing, my first response is just the sense that the other piece is that because there's no light, it felt like there was really no extra, there's not a lot of extra room. Unless you had energy, there wasn't a lot of extra energy. So it just made it a little more like, if it was happening, it was happening. And if it wasn't, it wasn't. And in my case, I didn't do a lot of talking. As I'm in this room, I'm imagining everyone having their own darkness retreat and seeing, you know, 60, 70 different darkness retreats. Every single person is going to have their own experience in this space. But, yeah, I didn't have a lot of dialoguing. It wasn't that kind of retreat for me.
The other part of my thought was about that I've heard that journalists who were held captive in these solitaries, that they very quickly lost their ability to form words because they weren't speaking with other people.
Mm-hmm. I'll get to that. Yeah, there's some over here on the side.
What role did curiosity play?
What role did curiosity play? Well, curiosity became more and more intense every day. This is, I think this is a great lead-in to just the next part. You know, there's this quality of, in the beginning, just kind of falling asleep and kind of being in this kind of oblivion space. And then waking up, if you could imagine being like, waking up, but not as yourself, but waking up. And then you're coming to life. But it's another part of the self that's coming alive. It's not from up here. It's from here. It's from all throughout your body. The life force is waking up. And the quality of the life force is interested in the life force. The energy is alive, and that what I'm trying to say is my curiosity wasn't coming from my head. But the more one phenomenon that couldn't be neglected would be this phenomenon known in Tibetan as the clear light. And the clear light was really the most remarkable aspect of this journey for me. There's a sense in Buddhist teachings, there's a lot of, one main theme is emptiness, the emptiness of things, the emptiness of the self. And sometimes the talking about or philosophy of emptiness can sound pretty empty, pretty like not much there. But what I found was that this process was a gradual journey into relaxation. And the more that I could relax my tension, the more that I felt emotions, really deep emotions, come to the surface. And as these emotions came to the surface, it was kind of like a life review. of, especially in the heart, there was a lot of feeling in the heart. As I would breathe into the heart, I would feel, you know, times in my life where I'd caused suffering or had lost love or wasn't really there in a way. And it was like I went right back into that experience. And this journey, it was a journey of purification that happened over the first 5-6 days. It got increasingly strong and acute and painful, actually, because there was a sense that normally that I, you know, have something to distract myself with. Normally there's a quality of being able to clamp down when that experience got too intense, you know, or go for the food or go for the Facebook or go for whatever it is. But without that, you know, the teachings that I had heard so much about over studying with Buddhist teachers is let go and be present and trust your experience. But the more that I would relax, the more this pain body would show up, and the trauma, you know, at some point, the more that I would be breathing into my body and feeling into my heart, I started doing this kind of shaking. This really deep shaking started to come out of my body. This kind of frozenness started to come out of my body. And I would shake for hours and hours and hours and hours, what felt like a really long time. But the interesting thing is that as this shaking was happening, it was like the space was working me in some way. Like this very deep stillness was a volcano of experience coming to the surface, you know. If you've seen the yin and the yang together, there's in the dark, there's the pearl of the light. So in the dark, one would think, well, the dark is dark. But the more that this shaking would move through, the more that my body would start to open, and as I would breathe, the energy, the prana, would open. And there's a piece I want to read that's worth reading. It's just a little bit of the science. So what opens then is specifically the pineal gland, is the third eye, and the energy along the spine. And there's this chemical, 5-MeO-DMT, which is a entheogenic chemical. It's in ayahuasca. One of the active compounds. And so Montauk Chia says this about the process. Days 6 through 8, at this stage, the pineal gland starts to produce this neurohormone 5-MeO-DMT. This is the psychoactive tryptamine. This psychoactive tryptamine is highly luminescent. It is also extremely phosphorescent due to the amount of phosphorine that it transmits onto the visual cortex. The neurotransmitter akashan is normally only active when we are in the womb and in the first months of our lives. It is now reactivated in the dark room. 5-MeO-DMT switches on 40% more of the cerebral cortex and awakens the nervous system to become aware of itself. Beingness results. Hence, the possibility of metaprogramming the nervous system's biocomputer, activating healing and conflict message assortment of the nervous system. 5-MeO-DMT is the empathogenic neurotransmitter that expands the emotional body between infinity and zero. It gives rise to telepathy in emotional and intuitive bodies. It engages the awakening of the flower of life in the spine, which begins to glow in a state of beingness and peace, compacting chi, consciousness, and awareness into the nervous system, working with the silent self and anchoring the immortal body. So, it was colorful. No, I want to actually stay with that a little bit. There's
fascinating that activates that in your brain.
Oh yeah. Do you want the?
I have a friend and daughter's down in Bolivia doing an ayahuasca retreat, so this seems like maybe kind of a parallel experience, but a different route.
Well, one of the things that, one of the interesting things is that there's the consciousness. Tibetans have a really kind of sophisticated view of the nervous system and the subtle body. And there's a concept in Tibetan Buddhism known as the timeless body or the indestructible body of clear light. And the view is that the more that the tension goes and the more that the nervous system opens to this kind of space, the more the sense of the boundaries of the body kind of slip away, and there's this whole field of experience that's opening. And I wanted to just kind of, I think, segue right into this last piece along these lines. Yeah, you know, the thing that was really special about this container and really inspires me at this time is the teachings that on this the sacred nature of our nervous system. You know, you don't have to go on a darkness retreat, even though I would recommend it for anyone who wants to. But nonetheless, what really comes alive in the dark space is this, the vividness of the energy that's behind the tension in our body. And, you know, what became really crystal clear was like, I felt the first few days there was a lot of pain and there was a lot of just riding the energy of the pain. And at some point around day six, there was a subsiding, there was a really dramatic subsiding of pain in the body. And as the pain would subside, there's an opening of space through the body, and the space itself, it just became very evident that the space itself, you know, there's an inner feeling like in being in the space and seeing displays of light coming out of nowhere and seeing, you know, thinking that almost it's like a trick of the senses that it's out there, the light's out there. But actually looking right back into the light and really feeling, oh, this is my nature, this is our nature. And the light, more and more and more, it felt like, oh, this light, this is joy, this light is joy, the light is love, the light is clarity, the light is confidence. All this, all different facets of the light. And the interesting piece for me was just that it had nothing to do with my personality. It has nothing to do with being a good or bad person. Just the nature of the body when we're not tampering with it. Opening up.
So when you talked about pain, did you mean more specifically psychic pain, physical pain, or both together?
Both together. Yeah. So maybe we'll just do a couple more questions and then we'll close for tonight.
Could you clarify about the space holder, when you interacted with the space holder? And
mm-hmm. The space holder was kind of like the umbilical cord to the outer situation. And so whenever you wanted to, you could write a note and you just have to scribble it in the dark and you slip it through the slot. Yep, and then magically someone would speak. Yeah. And that was a huge part of the journey, was actually just feeling the support of the space holder. And the sense that actually, you know, you're not by yourself. Although you can go lots of places in your own mind, in your own consciousness, there's a much bigger field here. Yeah.
So it was a long experience of working through pain and opening. Was that, that fluctuate between, you know, intense painful experiences as well as peace, you know, times of peacefulness and release, or did it really have to, did you have to get to the end of, or farther down the path to get, you know, to where you really were experiencing the light,
yeah,
and the openness?
Yeah, it was, how can I describe, there was a kind of like accordion effect for the first few days where it's cycling through up and down through periods of really real enjoyment and then hitting the pain and then enjoyment and kind of cycling like that. But it started, how I would describe it is it started to get more and more steep. It started to kind of crescendo and get just more and more acutely like, oh, it's just pain. Suddenly it's like there's a visceral nature to that pain, and the practice right now is just to be with the pain. And there's a word, tantra. The tantra, or the continuity of the experience, is just to see what this pain turns into.
You say pain, you mean fear?
Oh, yeah.
Hi, it sounds powerful and frightening. Did you work to study to find out what you could expect before you went through this? You mentioned some physiological changes. Were you prepared at all for some of these experiences? And it kind of sounds like an acid trip.
The short answer is yes. The short answer is that, as I said, the moment that I clicked the send button, I was being cooked by the experience. So there was kind of a buildup. And along these lines, there was one teaching that I knew to be my guiding teaching for the retreat. And that's, it's from the awareness tradition known as Dzogchen in Tibetan. And it's just the view of there's the thinking mind, there's thoughts, and then there's awareness, there's being and presence. And as long as I'm in my thinking mind, as long as I'm thinking about, if I spend all week long thinking and wondering when I'll get over, it's going to be a very long week. And so the practice, as I understood it, as I felt it, would be just to let all the thinking go for the week. But the only way to let all the thinking go would be be directly in my body. And so that's, in a sense, as I would be more and more and breathe into my body more and more, that's where kind of the intensity would come from.
Were you practicing Tai Chi or yoga while you were in there?
I was a little bit. Actually, I did a little bit of yoga, but I didn't really do a lot. A lot of what I did was shaking. It just became an archetypal experience that became less and less planned. The more that the time went on, the more it morphed into whatever it was. The space would change. And whatever was happening was what would be happening.
Well, since before, but you keep saying pain. I just wonder if fear is part of that, or it's the same thing, or if there's any distinguishing between the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that if pain is an onion, fear would just be at the core of the onion. And the week was basically a peeling of the layers of the onion. And by day six, what was really there was, you know, in some sense, my own crucifixion process with that.
I'm curious, except of the memories of this intense, beautiful experience. It's okay. What you brought home in terms of learning, I mean, a better understanding of yourself, your work, your feeling, what you brought home from this experience?
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel... The truth is that I would say I'm forever changed by the experience on the nervous system level, on the somatic level. I don't actually have so much memory. I do have spots of memory of the experience, but what I feel, what I would share with you all is just the truth that the emptying out of the tension, the relaxing through the tension, is a real thing that you can learn how to do. And underneath the tension, there's a quality of ease that's new for me and is making life better.
Would you do it again?
Absolutely.
Is there a specific exit mode, like in the last 24 hours or whatever, something special happens so that you can face the world?
Yeah. Well, you know, I did have a whole community of people who knew that I was doing the retreat, and there was a sense at the very end of the retreat, sometimes I would feel the group consciousness, and at the very end of the retreat, I just felt everyone with me, and I didn't do a lot of meditation. I did some meditation. Okay. I would do a couple sessions of meditation every day, but the last period of the retreat, as my nervous system calmed down, there was a sense of like, okay, this is what I'm here for. And the last sit, the last stretch from the evening until the morning, I should mention this. There's a great way that you come out of the retreat, which is you come out at dawn at 5:30 in the morning and you watch the sunrise. And a very interesting thing is when you open the door, your eyes are so unfocused and dilated that for the first 10 or 15 minutes, there was no depth perception. And everything was meticulously like sparkling clear, like it had just snowed, and everything was so fresh.
So I can't talk into that. I'm allergic to the microphone.
So I think just with this, just as we end the portion of the talk, I just want to invite just this question for everyone in the audience. You know, it doesn't have to be a darkness retreat, but the piece I would offer to you is just to notice where you're holding back from being with yourself. Because wherever that is, that's your darkness retreat. And I would invite, however you want to find a container in which you can be in that process. That was the one piece that my teacher Reggie has said to us over and over and over again. The practice is just not to exit. the practice is not to exit. So let's just sit for a moment and just let everything settle. And for this last sitting, let's bring our love to our heart center. And just letting the breath come into the heart. And as you breathe, see if you can feel the quality of light. See if you can feel the openness. And in this last minute, let's just open our heart to everyone in this room. And everyone that's not in this room. May all beings everywhere be happy. May they be peaceful. May they be free of suffering. And I want to read this quote. This quote can just send us into the night. Remember the clear light, the pure, clear, white light from which everything in the universe comes, to which everything in the universe returns. The original nature of your own mind. The natural state of the universe unmanifest. Let go into the clear light. Trust it. Merge with it. It is your own true nature. It is home. Thank you, everyone. Just one more piece is if you're interested in learning more, I'm also going to be offering starting in April, some retreats along these lines, working with energy and somatics and embodiment process and meditation. So feel free. I'll just put a sheet in the back if you want to leave your name and contact information. Can do that. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.